Welcome to the Revenue Lounge, a podcast for revenue operations professionals who want to understand the various facets of this important go-to-market function. In each episode, the team at Nectar interviews revenue warriors on how they are reimagining revenue operations in creative and disruptive ways, and what are their secrets to building a scalable and predictable revenue engine. Let's get started.
When COVID broke out in the US 4.5 years ago, everyone was forced into an environment of change and uncertainty. Remote work for nearly everyone became the norm. A key learning, though, is one of the benefits was that remote work can unlock unprecedented opportunities for productivity, work-life balance, and efficiency. And it also proved that operations could be scaled globally. Yet it brings its own set of challenges, especially when it comes to aligning teams, driving growth, and expanding into new markets. In a fully remote organization, the rules of engagement are different. While many companies are calling for people to come back into the office, hybrid work has become the norm, and many organizations have adopted a fully remote work environment. So how do companies scale their go-to-market strategies effectively in this new paradigm? Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Revenue Lounge podcast. I am your host, Randy Likas. And in today's episode, we will dive into the intricacies of scaling a global go-to-market strategy within a fully remote organization. Joining us as we explore how remote-first organizations are rewriting the playbook for global expansion is Patrick McKelvey. Patrick is the Vice President of Americas for Sales and Go-to-Market at Remote. Prior to Remote, he was the VP of Commercial Sales at Cornerstone On Demand. Patrick, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Randy. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you here as well. It's a topic that I think is on everyone's minds, especially as people are calling for people to come back into the office. But you and I both work at fully remote organizations, and so I think we're having a great discussion. We'd love to kick things off and have you tell us a little bit about yourself and your current role at Remote.
Yeah, sure. So I'm based in Portland, Oregon, but as you mentioned, we're a fully remote company, fully async, so no offices of any kind. So my office is what you're looking at back here, which is a beautiful thing. Married, I have a lovely six-year-old daughter who keeps us really busy. Love to spend a lot of time when I'm not selling or chasing salespeople around. We're doing outdoor activities, living in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. And then work-wise, yeah, I've been a lifelong sort of sales professional and talent developer, I like to say. I think the two things are two sides of the same coin. I actually started my career as a teacher. So I think there's a lot of parallels with sales and especially sales leadership and developing people, mentoring people, which is rather than making money and helping other people make money, what I love the most about my job.
Great. So you lead the sales and go-to-market currently. Tell us a little bit more about that. How big of a team do you have? And just a little bit more about the sales organization.
Yeah, sure. So Remote, we're headquartered in San Francisco on paper, but like I said, we're a fully remote and distributed organization. Really started, you know, company launched actually going after the European market, kind of the greater EMEA region, really in the employer of record space, EOR, for those familiar. And Americas have been kind of an emerging market for us, if you will, and ultimately is the biggest white-collar tech economy in the world still. But yeah, I was hired to basically take a lot of the great things that were happening in EMEA and figure out how to parlay that into success in the greater Americas. So currently lead a team of 55 individual contributors, a host of managers and supporting roles, sales development, work marketing adjacent, ops adjacent, a lot of the supporting roles that I don't manage directly, but certainly coordinate with leaders on the team to make sure that we've got a fully aligned go-to-market team and motion here in the Americas.
And is your team segmented at all? Like, do you go after like SMB mid-market enterprise, or is your business skew in a specific area?
Yeah, so it's split up in a couple of different ways. So we are segmented. We do designate between SMB and what we call mid-market plus. So organizations that are roughly 500 employees and over is an upmarket segment for us, and are doing some analysis right now on actually segmenting those roles further and really just sort of identifying how our clients buy essentially and looking at more transactional volume business, you know, largely inbound, kind of quicker close, that sort of thing versus more strategic business. And we find both of those motions exist within SMB. And then we also have specific product motions around our employer record product, our contractor management product, and our global payroll product.
And then does your team also skin what they kill, right? Or do you pass the business back over to the customer success team after the accounts landed?
Yeah, so we have a designated account management team on the other side of the book. Historically, when Remote was growing, we were kind of hunter-farmers. We called it ranchers, which was a new term to me. But I like that. Kind of makes sense. Now we're totally segmented on the other side of the line with the account execs on the hunter side and the account managers on the farmer side.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, so let's dig in a little bit about the fully remote organization, right? That's what you guys are at remote. And so with no physical office and having a team that's distributed across the U.S., can you talk to me a little bit about how you approach sales leadership with your team members in this distributed environment, a lot of async communications, and what your thoughts are around that?
Yeah, and for clarity, we've got folks in U.S., Canada, and actually throughout Latin America as well. So definitely across the mostly in North America. We've got a few folks down in Central and South America as well. Yeah, the remote environment's interesting. And I think for someone like me, and I think for a lot of folks, we've been remote for a good period of time before it was forced upon us with COVID and all the resulting changes from that experience. But it's really the async environment that's interesting. And to work for a company that, you know, was founded by engineers with really an async ethos, that's been an interesting kind of dichotomy and almost like a marriage between those of us who are in prospect or customer-facing roles that really need to be online when the people that we need to talk to are online, right? So we can't be fully async, but embrace a lot of async philosophy. So there's a lot of documentation. You know, we are maybe Slack's poster child. We use Slack almost religiously, some other tech to actually put everything in documents, make those documents shareable. And we really just try to streamline from an efficiency perspective, really everything that we do. So it's actually really nice. It's a nice sort of step forward, I feel like, from just a remote environment into more of an async environment, and really gives us some pretty big gains for efficiency. And examples of that, you know, a lot of the policies and the things like that obviously are documented, and you can read those in your own time, things that don't need to be done in a truly live environment. But a lot of our supporting roles are actually positioned around the globe as well. So if we need feedback on a legal contract, maybe we're a negotiator or something, a lot of those things can actually be put in place or in a queue when we sign off in the evening on in the Americas time zones, get some of those things like processed or progressed overnight, and then have those things ready to rock and roll when we wake up in the morning and sit down at our desk with our coffee.
Yeah. So at Nectar, we're a full remote organization as well. We're headquartered out of Singapore. And so what you just said is completely rings a bell with me, which is, you know, around the clock, right? You have something going on, you bring it over, and by the time you wake up, you've got your answers to some questions. So absolutely. So let's go back a couple of years. So 4.5 years ago, was it March of 2020, COVID breaks out. You were at Cornerstone at the time. Cornerstone, I assume at the time you guys worked out of offices, is that correct?
Yeah, so we had a corporate headquarters in Santa Monica, and then a number of Santa Monica, California, that is, and then a number of offices around the world. But yeah, there were a lot of the sales functions, some other folks on the go-to-market side who were remote-based, but definitely still came into the mothership with some regularity, right?
Yeah. So what was that like? So talk, you know, when, you know, March came around and most businesses started shutting down, or at least everyone was sort of mandatory working remotely, what was that change for you all, and how'd you manage that?
Yeah, I think the biggest pivot for us, Cornerstone had and still has a very strong corporate culture. And so we used to call it kind of corporate Disneyland when you go to Santa Monica and there's ping pong tables and refreshments and all the things that if you've experienced kind of that big tech stuff, a lot of that, which was great. And so I think it was a lot more disruptive for people who were used to coming into the office and working under those pretenses than someone like me who was largely remote based. For myself and my team, you know, field sales team, I think the biggest shift was just not traveling and actually having to pivot the way that we conducted business when it that kind of this remote lifestyle was forced upon us. So you know, there's so much you can learn. Anybody who's been in a, you know, big pitch meeting or a closing meeting or an on-site demo, but there's so much that you pick up just being in the room and looking at body language and chatting with people, conversation before the meeting starts, after the meeting starts, those sorts of things. So to completely shift away from that and interacting exclusively like this, I think our senses had to become a lot more acute because we weren't able to work off a lot of those cues. And then just being home, there were so many videos and memes and stuff about, I was thinking about the guy who was like on CNN and his kids running around in the background in his office. I think adjusting to a lot of that was challenging for us, but we got through it. We were all in it together, but definitely a big departure from the norm and a big shift.
Yeah. And I think that was pretty much consistent with a lot of companies. A lot of people were nervous, right? Like what's going to happen to our pipeline, what's going to happen if people, we can't, you know, sort of look over people. And I think there are just a lot of surprises that like business certainly can be done in this environment. And you know, lots of companies grew in that period. And it's funny because now we're at a point where people have gotten used to it. They enjoy it. They don't have to, you know, travel an hour and a half, 2 hours back and forth. And a lot of companies are trying to get their people to come back in full time. It's not really going over too well. And so you see a lot of this sort of hybrid, you know, coming in for a few days. But I think remote work is here to stay in some capacity or fashion, right? You mentioned though, and I find it interesting because we've kind of gotten 4.5 years later used to this environment. on the sales side, I found it sometimes a little bit more difficult when we get back on the road and we want to have these face-to-face meetings and pick up on these cues that people are like, well, you know, you're going to be in town, great, but I'm not going to be coming in the office, right? And I live 45 minutes away. So it's from a sales perspective, yeah. It's changed our way in terms of how we travel. Sometimes we're going and meeting people for coffee closer to where they live as opposed to like where the corporate headquarters is. And so, just, you know, are you finding that same thing?
Yeah, I think the expectation has shifted to your point. So a lot of meetings that would have been in person first, or that would have been the default option, I think have shifted to more of a remote first environment. And so it's certainly conducive to what we do and some of the flexibility that we try to empower, not only for our own employees at remote, but also the products and ultimately the service that we sell to facilitate more remote async environment as well. And the idea is really just being able to hire the best talent wherever it resides in the world, right? Why let that physical proximity be a barrier? So I think we try to embody what we espouse with the way that we conduct our business as well. And it's almost like you appreciate it when you do get to go on site. You know, it's trade show season here, at least in the US, North America. And so it's been fun to actually meet some of my team members for the first time after being here for almost 8 months and see how tall they are in real life and some of those things. So definitely don't take it for granted anymore, but I wouldn't trade it. I've gotten to see my 6-year-old daughter grow up basically. And that's a reality that were it not for COVID and some of the ways the world changed, I probably would have missed some pretty big and significant chunks of that.
Yeah, that is one of the advantages and goes back to that point of work-life balance. You are able to do a lot of things that you weren't able to do before. It makes me appreciate when we do have the face-to-face because, you know, people just open up more. You can probably accomplish more over a 60-minute meeting in person than you can through 5 or 10 Zoom meetings, right, in terms of what you're learning and what people are sharing. So while remote work is here to stay, I think just getting back out and seeing customers and interacting with them, especially for a go-to-market person, is extremely important. Are you all encouraging that as well, going out and seeing customers?
Yeah, we certainly don't discourage it. I think there's some efficiencies that can be gained, but if it's really pivotal to get on the road and spend some face time with folks, we're doing that. What we are doing a lot more deliberately is getting out and doing regional events or side events in conjunction with bigger conferences. And so that's been a good way to do a little bit of that without like fully course correcting and going back to our pre-COVID reality. We are doing some things like remotes never had an in-person sales kickoff, revenue kickoff. So in January, we're going to do that for the first time, bring the whole team together, which is pretty awesome. So for an old sales dog like me that values that face-to-face interaction, it's a breath of fresh air, but not too much.
Yeah. No, that's great. So let's talk about your experience that you had at Cornerstone, because you were there for, what, almost 11 years, and you grew, you know, really quickly at tons of revenue. What are some of the learnings you took from Cornerstone that you're bringing over now to remote, where, to your point earlier, like, you're building a new market here in the Americas? So what are some of those learnings that you're trying to reapply rather than reinvent the wheel?
Yeah, great question. So as a Cornerstone, obviously U.S. founded, went after the U.S. market first and then expanded globally. So I was there early enough. I wasn't there in the early days, but like putting together desks and stuff and whatnot, I came in. I think I was like employee 700 and something, and now they're like 6,000. So it gives you some sense of scale. But I got to see that like indirectly, you know, kind of had a ringside seat, front row seat to Cornerstone's international expansion. So there's a gentleman, Vincent Bellevaux, still there today as the chief international officer who really launched EMEA. And I remember seeing him in the early days, like advocate for resources and kind of campaign and lobby for support, the things he needed, and didn't know that someday I would be doing that basically in reverse. As I mentioned earlier, with remote starting largely in Europe and expanding the US, but definitely some passive takeaways. You know, I'm kind of like, oh yeah, I remember when Vincent was, you know, talking about that or doing that. And credit to him, because now that their presence in EMEA and really around the world is enormous. And that was basically all on the back of a lot of the groundwork that he laid. So certainly some of that. And then culturally, Cornerstone, for those who don't know, a learning management software, now kind of a talent management provider, and they've expanded beyond learning into some other aspects of talent management. But one of the things I always really appreciated, especially with background as a teacher, is they were so committed in developing their own people. So not only developing markets and capacities and whatnot, but really leaning in and saying, hey, how do we maximize the skills, the desires, some of the opportunities that we have in-house already with the team that we have on the staff and in the current org, and obviously fill in gaps beyond that with folks from outside the org. But that's what their software did. And we used to call it our internal version of Cornerstone. We used was called dog food, like eating your own dog food sort of thing. I would have rather been champagne, drinking your own champagne. It's a lot better eating dog food. But that really stuck with me too. And it's something that a lot of people invested in me and gave me a ton of opportunity to take steps forward in my career, for which I'll be forever grateful. But trying to play that forward when I was there, it's certainly something I've carried with me to remote and will for the rest of my career. I just think it's so important to invest in your own people. And a lot of times some of the best talent for the job you're trying to fill or the task you're trying to accomplish is actually right under your nose.
Yeah. Do you find, so now being at a fully remote company and having your team distributed all over, you know, probably some pretty aggressive growth targets that you're trying to hit and people are managing their own book of business. What's your operational cadence look like, maybe with your direct reports and then their teams, to make sure that you're pacing to the forecast? And is it daily? Is it weekly? Kind of, and is it different maybe at remote compared to how it was at Cornerstone?
Yeah, I think there's definitely more of a tendency to not accomplish something with a sync meeting that could be accomplished async. That's something that is really clear from Marcelo Lebray, Don Vanderbord, our founders of Remote, and something they fundamentally believe in. It's like a non-negotiable in their mind. So I mentioned earlier, we have to balance that with these prospect and client-facing roles that we sit in. But as far as our teams go, we do have sync meetings. I've moved a lot of my syncs with my leaders to be bi-weekly. And then one-on-ones, we use a platform called Notion. And for those who don't know, I don't know if they'd appreciate me saying this, but it's like a Google Docs on steroids. It's like a much more capable Google Docs. But everything is in there. Like, you can go to our website and our employee handbook is in Notion, public facing. So everything has a Notion page. It's kind of a joke, but it's also a truth. So a lot of it is just prepping a lot of that information and really, really emphasizing the importance of pre-reads before we get into a meeting. So it's like something that may have taken an hour in my former life or in former roles, we can actually accomplish in 15 or 20 minutes if everybody actually does their homework, right, does the pre-reads, and we go from there. And so there's a lot of async collaboration that feeds into the efficiency at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So Notion is a key tool. What about other forms of go-to-market data that you need? I'm not sure if you guys use Salesforce or not as your CRM, but I would imagine there's other tools, sales tech tools, conversational intelligence tools, or other types of things that help support and embrace a distributed team. What have you found to be most helpful? And then that'd be question 1A. And question 1B would be, how do you make sure that the right data is getting into the right system so that you're able to make effective decisions or off the data?
Yeah, for sure. So like general collaboration tools, we mentioned Slack. So we use a ton of Slack. It's like round the clock because we've got a global workforce. And so I've actually had to turn off the notifications on my smartwatch because like my hand was getting tired from vibrating all day. There's truth in jest, actually. There's more truth to that. Another technology that I was aware of but had not used before I came to remote is Loom. So just a video capture tool, just kind of short videos. You can record longer videos as well. But like when I provide forecasts, when my team forecasts to me, when I provide forecast updates to, you know, our C-suite, we do a lot of that via Loom. So we'll do a written forecast in Notion or sometimes in Slack, just depending on how formal it is, and a Loom accompanying it and explaining it. And I think you'd have to ask them, but I think with a lot of we call our executive team the bridge. There's a little Star Trek reference. Our founders are big Trekkies. But the bridge team, most of them probably just watch that Loom and never actually read the document, right? Because it's pretty comprehensive. They get what they need to know out of that. So again, it's about efficiency. And a lot of times it's like stream of consciousness. I can record a 2-minute, 3-minute video and probably save us both. I think actually Loom even says it on, they have like a little tracker. It says you've saved your team 16 hours of meetings and by all the Looms you've recorded or whatever. So that's a pretty great technology. Sales tech stack, we do use Salesforce. We use Clary. One thing I'd call out too, we use Clary's Copilot functionality to record calls. Mm-hmm. And so we use that a lot for internal development, coaching purposes. I've used Gong in prior lives for folks who are more familiar with that and not advocating for one tool over the other necessarily. But that's huge for us too. I think in your passive time, and I still try to make time every week to listen to at least an hour of calls just randomly. So if my team's listening to this, you may be on the wheel of rotation. But it's super insightful for me because I can't be on it doesn't scale. I wouldn't try to be on every sales call that goes on, but it gives me some good like passive insight into what's going on and some of the analytics that tools like those have to prioritize folks who are talking too much or not spending enough time asking questions or not asking the right questions. I find that data in aggregate really helpful at my level as well.
Yeah. We use Loom as well. It's a great tool, obviously, when you're talking to prospects and customers. But to your point, I use it a lot internally as well when I'm trying to just explain something really simple. It saves so much time to be like, here's kind of what, rather than a 30-minute call, like a 2-minute Loom can accomplish the same thing. So 100% agree with that. Are you finding... Sure.
And walking people through things, right? Yeah, I was just going to say walking people through things. And for those who have not used it, just to be able to do a quick video, you have your face down in the corner. So there's a personal element to it. But to walk someone through a forecast or a report or something, it's amazing like how much efficiency you gain. It's like doing it live, but not live, if that makes sense.
Exactly. 100%. What's your take? You know, it's funny. It's sort of a philosophical debate that people have where you jump on these Zoom calls and people have the camera off. And, you know, some people are like, oh, no, you're talking to a customer. You've got to have your camera on. And other people are like, well, just follow what the client does. If the client has it off, it's okay to you, for you to have it off, right? What's your position on that?
I would say my position has changed. And part of it is going, I think, fully remote and mostly async. I'm a big proponent in having cameras on. And I think it's as much for me, like selfishly, as it is for folks on the other side or whatever we're trying to convey, just because I'm a people person, I'm a sales guy, right? So I miss that human interaction. So there's something to be said to sit here and see your face and facial expressions when I may not leave my office all day, right? Like I may be walking around in my slippers all day, maybe go out to the kitchen to refill the coffee cup or something. But I really like it. And it's not like a hard and fast requirement for us, but we coach our teams to lead and set that example. And I also think we were talking about moving online versus in-person, virtual versus in-person meetings. I think you miss out a lot as a rep when we're trying to, you know, read body language and inference and that sort of thing. To have a camera off, I think it, in some way, at least hamstrings us a little bit from what we might otherwise, you know, glean from being able to see somebody's body language and that sort of thing.
I 100% agree with that. So, you know, back in, I guess we'll call pre-COVID, a lot of times leaders would be like, I'm going to come out to Chicago for 3 days, like line up a set of meetings for me while you're out there and do ride-alongs or team dinners, like that type of thing. Are you doing that still, or predominantly are you just working out of your own cities and using tools like Zoom?
Yeah, so one of the things that I did when I came in and kind of took over the Americas, took the helm, is you regionalize the teams for the first time. And there's a couple reasons for doing that. One is we want to build capacity in every market and make sure that we're covering our territories and owning the geos, like running them like franchises, all those sorts of things. But also by localizing, I think it gives us better perspective on what's going on in the market and also better proximity to what's going on in the market. So when there is a regional event or something that's going on situationally, number one, not only are we more likely to know about it, but it's easier for us to attend, more cost effective for us to attend. And so a lot of the internal meetings that we have are bolted on to a regional event or a conference that maybe it's a national conference that happens to be in that region. But ultimately, we're not like fully regionalized yet. I think we'll get there at some point. But ultimately, that would be the idea. And it just makes it more conducive to connect. One thing remote does too is that we actually allocate budget for local sort of pods of employees within a city to get together. So we'll pay for a dinner or, you know, top golf or whatever folks want to do, just to facilitate that, because there is an acknowledgement, no matter how passionate we are about remote work and remote life and async life, there's an acknowledgement that it is great for people to get together sometime at their option.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit earlier about the advantage of maybe cross-functional teams and having people overseas work on things while you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. But when you think about other areas where maybe you have to actually sync with them during maybe the U.S. hours, and how have you found maybe best practices around a fully remote organization to work with those cross-functional teams? Any advice or recommendations you'd give?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things, like, being in sales, we're coming down to end of quarter or something, and deals absolutely have to get done, and the resource is sitting in some time zone over in Asia or something, it's not super conducive or respectful to ask them to stay up or wake up in the middle of the night to see if we got those red lines back over to them or whatever. So there have been situations where we built capacity, right, in our region just for practical purposes. So deal desk, legal support, things like that. And I'm grateful to have that level of support. But even then, my partner in the RevOps org lives in Brazil. So he's not a town away or even in my time zone necessarily, but it's close enough. And we were able to find an amazing, you know, talented guy. Shout out to Gabriel if you ever listen to this. Grateful for you, brother. It's living almost half a world away, basically. So there are those aspects as well. And then the other thing I would say, and we really coach the teams on this, and I think it's best practice, even if you work in a fully synced culture, is to, you know, give people a heads up or runway to get things done for you. It's super impractical for a rep to bring a deal to the table, like, you know, 5 p.m. on the last day of the quarter and say, hey, I'm going to light the world on fire. I need legal to come in and review these red lines. So we try to get out in front of that as much as we can and say, hey, legal team, we've got these 6 contracts that are probably going to need some attention. So we'll communicate with you, we'll Slack you, whatever, you know, give us your working hours or your bandwidth or whatever, just so that it's not a surprise. I think that's probably the biggest thing. And we've all been there. I've been that guy probably more times than I can count. So sometimes you learn the hard way. But yeah, I just think setting those expectations with folks, and generally people are super supportive and willing to lean in and help you get things done, especially at remote. We've got an awesome culture of folks around that who are really committed to helping sales be successful, which I'm super grateful for.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point, and I'll say it a little bit differently, but I think we're saying the same thing is you got like the importance of managing expectations with those other stakeholders as opposed to dropping on them at the last minute is critically important in a remote environment. And so, yeah, getting ahead of that. And of course, there's always going to be last minute things where you need some help, but the surefire way to burn a relationship is to dump a bunch of work on somebody when they're not expecting it and ask them to turn it around the next day, right? So I think that's a really good point and is making sure we're managing expectations and getting in front of it as much as possible. What about onboarding? You talked about America's being a growth market, and so I'm sure over the past 9 months, we've been building out a team probably at a pretty rapid clip. You bring somebody on new to the organization. Yeah, you've got the tools internally, Notion, whatever document you have, a Copilot to maybe listen to calls. But how do you make sure that you're ramping new people effectively in a fully remote work environment?
Yeah, great question. So like most companies, maybe all companies have an onboarding curriculum, and it's very structured, kind of a week of getting remote, and we put them into sales onboarding and product certifications and things like that. The two things that stand out, though, that I think are unique about remote, not entirely unique to remote, but the two things that I think are somewhat unique or people might find unique is we have an onboarding buddy system and everybody gets an onboarding buddy. So when I started, paired with our VP of strategic finance, who's still a great friend and advocate, I'm very grateful for her and for having that relationship when we need to get things done with finance, super strategic. But it's very important, especially with all the Notion docs and the Slack channels and just the async thing. And for somebody who's coming maybe from a sync environment to async, I think just learning some of the cultural norms, it's really important to be able to bounce that off somebody for me to say, hey, Randy, like, this is kind of freaking me out. What's going on with this? Or, I know this is in Notion somewhere, but I just spent 20 minutes looking for it and I can't find it. Can you point me in the right direction before I go crazy? Yeah. So that's really important. The other thing too, and I think I actually don't know the pedigree on this, but I'm pretty sure it started with our founders, is the openness and encouragement to set up like a 20-minute, they call them coffee chats, and they're totally virtual, obviously, but maybe you bring your cup of coffee, your respective cup of coffee to the meeting. And it's important culturally that you accept those. And so on any given week, I may have 5 or 6 people that I don't know from across the company, maybe they're new, maybe they're not, reach out and just put time on my calendar because they've got some questions. And sometimes it's as simple as, what do you like to do and this and that? But a lot of times they're business related questions and perspective that people are trying to get. And I think that is a great way to, interact and keep that personal aspect, even in a remote world, but also if you can get information transferred efficiently and get some of those questions answered that may otherwise be hard to find or somewhat nebulous.
Yeah. Are you finding even after about 9 months that are you still doing those coffee chats as well?
I do. Yeah. Especially when there's somebody new in the org, and we are growing so quickly in all, not just sales and go-to-market roles, but growing quickly everywhere. And so it's amazing to me sometimes, like I recently did this with our partnerships team. We've got a really robust partnerships org, and I talked to the leaders, but I didn't talk to a lot of the, kind of the individual contributors and folks that were running different segments of the business. So it's kind of like when you read a book and it opens your eyes to something that's some new topic or forum. And so you read a couple more books in that vein. I feel like it's sort of like that, where I'm keen on this whole partnerships thing. Let me dig into this a little more. I feel the same way about like our business in Asia Pacific. They're also an emerging team. So interacting with them, we have a lot of the same challenges and we're focused on a lot of the same things. You're solving for the same problems. And like field marketing, for example, is something we've been bouncing back and forth. And the markets are different and cultures are different and those sorts of things. But at the root, a lot of times, there's a ton of value in finding out what they're doing, what's working, what's not, that we can leverage and hopefully, share some of our own wisdom as well.
I've got one more question for you on remote. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you a couple go-to-market questions specifically before we move over to our lightning round.
Sure.
So last question on remote. What haven't I asked you that maybe I should have as it relates to working in a fully remote environment, scaling a go-to-market team in that type of a distributed environment that I should have asked you?
I think, generally for anybody who is building a team, large organization, small organization, it's actually the non-sales pieces that I find like the most insightful. Like you take on more responsibility and you can come up with a sales pedigree. And I'm sure this is true if you come up in marketing or in finance or whatever, but it's the cross-functional collaboration pieces and almost like the things that I didn't know when I walked in the door and in some ways are still learning. So I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a question you missed, but that's been a big epiphany here at remote. And while I don't own marketing, it's like being able to ask the right questions or understanding in a growing org versus Cornerstone, where we've got 6,000 people, when it's like every box has been checked, every question has been answered multiple times over, just learning some of the nuances of the surrounding and supporting business. And I'd recommend anybody do that, no matter what level you're at or what size of organization. I just think it's super healthy to learn how you know, be curious and learn how sort of the machine, all the parts fit together in the machine. I think it makes me better at my job and build some cross-functional collaboration amongst those different teams. So yeah, I think that's been one, you know, kind of epiphany for me. And other things, yeah, I think SDRs and partnerships, and you know, the list goes on and on, because there are a lot of different orgs to interact with and ultimately support sales orgs.
Yeah, great advice. So the go-to-market question I had for you, I've been probably to 3 or 4 conferences over the past month or so, and a topic that everybody seems to be talking about is the difficulty right now it is to get people's attention, to get first meetings. And there's 2 data points I'll talk about specifically. One is, I was talking to somebody who hosted a CRO roundtable at the B2B Marketing Exchange about a week or two ago. And the takeaway from that roundtable was that net new meetings were down about 30 to 50% year over year. And I think that's a function of the past couple of years, the sales engagement platforms. I used to work at one of them, so I'm guilty of them, were used in a way as like spam cannons, right? And now with AI SDRs and AI email generators, it's getting even worse. And so a friend of mine, Mark Costigo, had coined this term, saying that we're in this period of the great ignore, which is where, because of all these bad behaviors and these bombardment of messages, people are just, even good messages, like well thought out, relevant research messages, maybe have a 5% chance of getting a response back, because people are just sort of looking at their inbox and going through the mental spam filter and you know, see what they got to reply back to. I'm curious, are you seeing the same thing in you know, your market and your environment, and what are you guys doing about that?
Yeah, I think it is definitely harder to get people's attention. And I feel so bad for people who try to sell to me, because I'm ruthless. I've got all the filters set up in my inbox and all the rest of it, and the setting on my iPhone that filters everything to voicemail if you're not in my book. So I'm really hard to get a hold of. But yeah, I think for me, we're absolutely seeing it. And there are things you can leverage, intent signals and some of those things to narrow your funnel a little bit. But I think tried and true, and this is probably not news, not like earth-shattering news to anyone, but I think it's so important to do your research. The things that do get my attention and where we have success, where our reps and SDRs have success getting in touch with people, it's because it's not that they did hours worth of research or read the entire 10K or whatever, but they at least have enough to have a perspective in the messaging that they're using. And that message is consistent and that it actually speaks to a problem folks have. One of the things I talk with my team all the time is make sure that you are problem-centric in your approach and outcome focused, right? So the analogy I would use is, I can offer you this incredible steak, right? The most incredible steak, you know, 100-day dry age Wagyu beef cooked just the way you like it or whatever. But if you just came home from a huge buffet lunch, like, you don't care about that steak. So right. I'm basically offering you something that's premium, but it's addressing a problem that you don't have. So in all of that, it's this feature, that feature, your G2 scores, blah, 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 blah. Doesn't matter. It's the old question, like, who cares? So things like that, I think, are super important. And there's a persistence thing, not annoyance, but I think if I see the same thing pop up in my inbox, the same name, and they're asking me really good questions, and it's a problem that I have, I'm more likely to pay attention to that. So I wouldn't give up just because that perfectly crafted message you put out there the first time doesn't land. I think there's something to be said for persistence as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. And I would just add to that is multi-channel, right? So like, email, LinkedIn, like somebody's posts, find out what they're posting about, make a comment on it, get your name out there a little bit more. The chances of maybe them return, as long as you're thoughtful about it and not being sort of surface level about it, people will notice that, right? And yeah. And so I think just using all the channels that are at your disposal, phone still works too, by the way, you know, so making sure that we can use all the
totally does. Yeah. Great. I love the corporate gifting platforms and the way those have pivoted. I was just going to say, Randy, the corporate gifting platforms, the way those have pivoted now, it's like a virtual Starbucks card, or you can donate the money to charity. Things like that actually work pretty well versus you're not sending them a bottle of wine anymore. Although if you want to send me a bottle of wine, I will graciously accept. But that's been an interesting pivot too, kind of in the post-COVID world. And it's been interesting to see how some of those technologies and programs have evolved in ways that are more conducive with kind of our increasingly virtual world.
Yeah. Yeah. 100% agree. All right, so let's pivot to what we call our lightning round, which is a little bit less work and a little bit more personal. I'll start with one question, which is, if you go back and you can't be in sales anymore, what would you do for a living?
Yeah, I'd go back to teaching. I actually have this pact with my 2 best friends who are far along in their careers as well, that someday we're all going to retire to Central Oregon, to a little town called Bend, Oregon, and spend our our winter skiing and our summers outside playing and just go teach like public high school. I think to have that kind of perspective from a bunch of guys that have been out in the world and seen a lot of stuff, I think that would be pretty cool. And also hats off to all the teachers out there. My baby sister's a high school teacher, and that is yeoman's work. Those are the real heroes for sure.
Yeah, I agree. A buddy of mine bought a house. He lives in the Bay Area, but he bought a house in Bend about 5 years ago, and I have yet to be there. And he's like, dude, you got to come to Bend. It's fantastic. So that is on my list to do over the next 6 months or so.
You got to keep that quiet. All the Californians coming in, they're not too keen to all that. So tell them to keep that under wraps.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely go ahead. It's a fantastic place.
Is that right? Yeah, I'm going to have to do that. All right, next question. What is the favorite part of your job?
Yeah, it's coaching and developing people. I mean, I love making money and sales targets as much as the next guy, but I think the true passion about this job for me is being able to help people accomplish their goals. And certainly financial perspective is great when a rep goes out and buys their first house or something because they did really well. I love those stories. But I think the biggest joys in my career have been paying back a lot of the investments that have been made for me by other people over the years, people that were willing to slow down and teach me something or take me under their wing or give me exposure to maybe something that I didn't have direct access to and help develop me or help me develop myself. So I think it's really important for all of us, especially as leaders in sales, to make sure that we always have some focus on that. And it's great culturally for your org for sure. But I think down heart of hearts, like you get into leadership for a reason. And sales management is absolutely leadership. And there's tremendous opportunities to invest in people and give something back.
Okay, there's always going to be a flip side to that question, which is least favorite, or I often ask a different way, which is what's really hard right now about your job?
I think for me personally, it's balance, especially being in a company that is fully async and distributed. You could literally work round the clock, and our founders and executives have done a great job of setting the example. You can see on our CEO's calendar, he's like, I'm picking up my kids on this window. I am like riding my bike, and we're encouraged to be very public. Like, don't hide that you're going to the gym or spending time with your children, please. Yeah. It's important. But I think just for me personally, I love what I do. I'm very passionate about it. I kind of get fixated on a problem and I want to solve that problem. I want to drive this outcome or whatever. And so it's hard for me personally to switch off. So I think just maintaining that balance. I'm a dad. I like to do stuff outdoors, like to have a life, all those sorts of things. So just knowing when to shut it off for me. And I wouldn't say it's a constant struggle, but it's something on which I'm constantly focused.
What about thinking back to when you were maybe young in your career, a rep carrying a bag, and you received a piece of advice that has really stuck with you? Mm-hmm. And as you've gotten into leadership, often reflect back on and think about. Anything come to mind?
Yeah, actually, when I first got into sales leadership, kind of took my first, I guess it was my first frontline leader job, but the first time I took a step up to second level leadership job, worked for a former sales leader, Jim Gill, if you're out there. I think Jim's now like CEO somewhere doing great things out in the world. But I actually asked him that question. I said, hey, words to the wise, as I take this next step, what would you want to share with me? Or what would you want to know if you're in my shoes? And he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, you can get out of the pool, but don't ever fully dry off. And I've thought about that so many times in so many different ways.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to steal that, actually. I like that.
Do it.
Yeah. What advice would you give to maybe your younger self?
That's a great one. I would go back to the development thing. I would say don't ever be afraid to or shy to raise your hand, whether it's like asking for help or asking for perspective on something. I always think about it more through a development lens. And I tell this to my teams as well. You know, people come to you for some coaching advice. And I'm so glad that you came to me. And they say, hey, you know, I want to get into leadership someday. What should I do? And I feel like half of that is just like being willing to let the world know that those are your aspirations. And I would never penalize anyone for being ambitious, right? It's a meritocracy. We all have to earn it, you know, those sorts of things. But I love it when people say, hey, this is my path. Can you help me? It's one of my favorite questions. And so, yeah, I would just tell myself to, you know, not be shy about that. There's really no harm that can come from it, especially if you're willing to put in the work.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. The other thing I think, and you know, I've heard you reference yourself as being a dad right now. I also have a 5-year-old, almost 6, and a 3-year-old. Like enjoy the ride, right? Because it goes by really quick.
It absolutely does. Yeah, and I think the older you get, the more true that becomes.
100%. Yep. So, all right, Patrick, listen, I appreciate your time this afternoon. This was a really fun discussion. If I ever get out to your neck of the woods, let's get a coffee together. And thanks again for the time.
Sounds awesome. Thanks for having me, Randy. It's been my pleasure.
All right. Take care.